Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show. On with the interviews today. First up is Mandy Smithberger. She is the director of the CDI Strauss Military Reform Project at POGO, the Project on Government Oversight. That's pogo.org. Welcome to the show. Mandy, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us on the show today. And I don't know if it's your hilarious deadpan writing style or if it's just the facts that had me laughing my head off while I was reading this thing. Not ready for prime time. The F-35 is not ready for IOC and won't be anytime soon. Oh, there's my first question. What's IOC?
So that's initial operational capability. So the idea would be ready for combat.
Right. And then, well, does initial imply it should still keep getting better after that? And this is just good enough?
This is just starting to be ready for combat. And that, yes, more improvements are on the way. Not quite ready for full operational.
Right. IOC is the minimum threshold for good
right.
enough. Right. Okay, good. And it's not ready for that. Great. Now, so it's funny because, you know, I've read about a lot of different problems with this thing that aren't even mentioned in here. But, you know, the machine gun and the camera for sighting ground targets and all these different things. The bombs don't fit in the bomb bays, and they can only hold a couple anyway, and all kinds of different problems that aren't even in here, and yet it may take the whole interview to go through all of the different problems that you do cover in here, and all of them being of the highest importance. So I guess could you start with the flawed software? That's where you start in at least the introduction to the study here is the flawed software where the plane systems don't even talk to each other, right? After how many years have they been designing this thing?
They've been designing it for many years now, and right, you still don't have the capability for these computer systems to really be able to talk to each other. And something that, you know, to keep in mind with the F-35 in general is that you're really relying on these computers to be able to give you your situational awareness to help you to know when you have problems with the equipment and just really for everything for combat.
And so now, if I remember right, they started drawing this thing back in the 1980s when the USSR still existed. And they said, boy, the Soviet MiGs of the 21st century are going to be a real problem. So we're going to have to get to work on this thing. And so how could it be that the code is all written by different programmers working on different systems, but nobody thought that they all needed to be working on one flowchart here to make sure that their programs talk to each other or what?
So some of the issues that occur is that as you keep on trying to correct problems in the code, that you don't have enough testing happening to see, okay, that change that we just made, does it actually impact all of the underlying code before that? And then, again, this is one of the problems of when you subcontract these systems the way that we tend to do, that you do have all of these companies that aren't really talking to each other and making sure that they're going to have interoperable systems.
All right. Well, and I guess there's nobody at the head of the canoe yelling row, huh? It's kind of a free-for-all there with the organization?
Presumably, the head of the Joint Program Office, Lieutenant General Chris Bogdan, is supposed to be the person who's saying row and making sure that all of these efforts are being coordinated. And so you're seeing that oversight and management is not sufficient to correct these problems.
All right. Now, so I want to get back to all the money and all the bookkeeping tricks and all of that stuff in a minute, but can we go down a little bit of a list of some of the physical problems that the jet has at this point? And you can specify, you know, different versions of the plane have different problems if you need to as well.
Right. So some of the problems that we're seeing is still that this helmet that the pilot is supposed to be able to use is having stability problems with the computer, that there are concerns about wing drop so that the plane, you know, would keep on spinning and Additionally, there are concerns about the ability to be protected against lightning.
Wait. Go back to the wing drop for a second. What's that?
So wing drop is it's called uncommanded wing drop. So it's when maneuvering hard at high speeds that you just keep on spinning out of control. And this is a concern for all of the variants, but in particular, this is a problem for the Navy variants and is even worse. Mm-hmm.
And then I think you say in here that, first of all, their solution is they're going to add on some spoilers like, a Honda.
Right.
That's going to fix it. But then, secondly, this is a problem not when you're flying over some talibs, dropping bombs at leisure. This is a problem when you're actually having to defend yourself in any way from another jet and doing hard turns in a dogfight. When you need that stability, when it really counts, is right where you don't have it. Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's most vulnerable when trying to maneuver out of the way of a missile.
Right. Lock on. Uh-oh. I guess you got me. Okay. And then, I'm sorry, lightning, after the wing drop, you mentioned flying in the rain, right?
Right. something, again, that you don't really want to have to be worrying about, but there's a system, it's called OBIGS, that is supposed to make sure that you remove enough oxygen from the tank so that you don't have a risk of fire. But that system, even after several redesigns, isn't working. And so there are limitations so that the plane can't fly within 25 miles of thunderstorms. And that's particularly a problem because these planes are being training with these planes at Eglin Air Force Base, which is in southern Florida and has some of the most lightning strikes that we have in the country.
Mm-hmm. And then I think you say here you shoot this thing with a cap gun and it explodes. Is that right?
Yeah, it's always concerning when you look in a testing report and they warn you about cascading fire.
Well, and let's get back to the cap gun in a second. But you say here that it can't even dump fuel. If it needs to dump fuel in an emergency, it'll blow itself up doing that.
Yeah, there will be risks of fire and dumping fuel, which is something that, again, you just need to be able to do as a fighter plane.
This is like the movie Airplane 3, I guess.
Yeah.
Leslie Nielsen. They'll have to dig him up to do the on-screen version of this thing. Okay, but no, seriously, though, if you shoot it at all, you cannot expect it to survive a hit from cannon fire or shrapnel of any kind?
Yeah, that is currently a major risk for the program. And something that's really important to note with this was discovered through live fire testing. And this is something that Pentagon reformers really worked to be able to make sure that testing would include, mm-hmm. actually seeing how these weapon systems survive under live fire. Mm-hmm. And as there are discussions as to whether testing programs are slowing down the procurement process, it's important to remember that this kind of testing can discover significant safety vulnerabilities that we want to make sure that our pilots aren't going to have to be worrying about when they're in combat.
Mm-hmm. And then didn't I read something, too, about the rain that the so-called stealthy material that's not even stealthy anyway, you just got to change your frequency of your radar, and there it is. But anyway, they said that the chemical composites and all the high-tech so-called skin on the plane also is just vulnerable to water. You can't fly through a thick cloud even, I guess.
Right, and you have to be concerned as well with when there you have the long cure times for those stealth skins as well, which kind of result in it being a hangar queen even more.
Mm-hmm. A hangar queen, that means you can't use it. It just sits there.
Right.
It gets worked on.
Like a potted plant.
I got it. Yeah, safer in there for sure. But that's where the fraud comes in too that you mentioned here, where they just start changing the definitions of words and things like this so that they can try to deny how much time these things spend under maintenance as it is. Is that correct?
Right. So some of the ways that they've been cooking those numbers is if a part fails, but they know that they're going to get a redesigned part for that later on, they don't count that as a part failure. And even though they know that they need new tires on the planes, when those tires are, fall apart, they score that as a no defect tire mm-hmm. replacement. It just kind of challenges any kind of logic.
Oh, and then actually, speaking of which, you even say that they're having to change the tires, redesign the tires for the thing right now. Is one of the things on the block. They haven't figured out the tires for it yet. in 2015. All right. I'm sorry. Hang on right there, everybody. We'll be right back with Mandy Smithberger. She's from POGO, the Project on Government Oversight. You got to go read this thing. Not ready for prime time about the F-35. Lockheed's F-35. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Mandy Smithberger from pogo.org. That's the Project on Government Oversight. The article, the study, is not ready for prime time. And there's a brand new thing from the Government Accountability Office, I think, as well, and a couple new reports out. The Fiscal Times, Yahoo News have some stories about this as well. It's been a big story for quite a while, what a piece of junk the F-35 is now, and how expensive it is. But now, before we get to that, back to that, Mandy, let me ask you this. Are there any advantages to the F-35 over the F-15 that you could really give them credit for that make this necessary by any stretch of the imagination?
I think there are some capabilities that will be to our advantage when it comes to certain kinds of jamming capabilities. But what's really concerning is just how expensive this platform is to use and whether it's really practical and ready for combat.
Well, and jamming, I mean, you can put whatever new jammer you got in the nose of an F-15, right?
Right.
And we already got F-15s, right?
We do.
How many, by the way? Do you have any idea?
You know, I don't know that off the top of my head, but it's important also to keep in mind that this system is part of why the Air Force is trying to retire the A-10 as well, which provides essential close air support.
Right. Tell them a little bit more about that, because that's a really important story there, I think. We've covered it before in the show, but this is a fight that's continuing right now in the Congress, et cetera.
Right. This is an ongoing fight. So for the second year in a row, the Air Force has proposed retiring the A-10. Saying that they need to be able to take the maintainers from the A-10 and, you know, bring them over to the F-35. But the problem is that the F-35 isn't going to be able to accomplish this mission until 2021 or 2022 at the soonest. And so instead you're going to have bombers and F-18s trying to cover this mission, but it's just not as effective of a platform, and there's a higher risk of fratricide and civilian casualties by using those platforms rather than the A-10 that we know works and is effective.
Yeah. In other words, the A-10 pilots can see what they're killing, and the F-35 or even F-18 pilots, et cetera, they have to rely on their computers to guess right, they hope, and cross their fingers and hope things go well when they drop their bombs from much higher up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and for much higher speed. And of course, you know, it seems like the theory probably, you know, in the Lockheed promotional videos is like one day we're going to have to meet China out in the Pacific Ocean or something like this. But in truth, and I'm not advocating this, but I'm just saying for argument's sake, in truth, our wars are against tribal natives in lands that we're conquering, and they can't possibly shoot back, you know, against any of these planes. And so you could really, you know, you could fight the Afghan war with Cessnas or whatever, right? Certainly you don't need these highest big ticket so-called super jets that don't even perform what they're supposed to do. But even if you took their performance for granted, they're so overqualified for the job that they're ineffective at it.
Right. And again, look at how often we're using the A-10 in our current wars and how the F-22 didn't make an appearance until our airstrikes in Syria.
And now, and by the way, how's the F-22 doing these days?
So the F-22 suffered a similar problem to what we're seeing with the F-35, where a lot of capabilities were deferred until later blocks so as to not be considered cost for the acquisition program. and we have a $7 billion upgrade package that we have. It's called a quote-unquote modernization package, specifically $11.3 billion added on to make sure that the F-22 is capable of everything we need it to be.
And is it still the case that they're not making any new ones?
Correct. They are not making any new ones.
Well, that's good at least. And now I saw in your bio here at Pogo 2 that you did some work on the Littoral Combat Ship. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. So the Littoral Combat Ship is a Navy program that's supposed to be kind of a plug-and-play. And again, kind of similar to the Joint Strike Fighter, it's supposed to be able to do a lot of missions. And what we've really found with the LCS is that because they have had so much overlap between production and testing, that the LCS isn't able to yet perform the missions that we need it to, that it's expensive, that there have been manufacturing problems that have happened with the program. And so Secretary Hagel ordered a review of the program after the Director of Operational Test and Evaluation pointed out, hey, this the LCS is not going to be combat survivable.
Meaning, again, you shoot it at all and it's done?
Correct.
And it's almost like it's not really the Navy or the Air Force, commanders actually interested having any say in the design of these things at all. It's simply just, well, what costs the most and what will need the most improvements over time? let's make it as shoddy as we can, so we always have to fix it. I even read, I'm not saying I endorse this, but just for irony's sake, I read a comment that seemed very informed on an article about the F-35 once, saying all of this negative stuff about the F-35 is a Lockheed propaganda campaign against their own fighter, because they want to start all over again, because that's where the money's really at. And so you can't even trust the critics, because it's all a plot to get us for even more. And it just goes to show, whether that's true or not, obviously, but it just goes to show that it's kind of pretty widely accepted that the real purpose of the F-35 is to make money off of the taxpayer, not to produce a plane that does all the things they say it's going to do.
Right, and it's important to keep in mind that as we talk about, you know, reforms to the pay and benefits for our troops, that you see that the profit margins for these major defense companies have not suffered at all as a result of sequestration.
Right. All right, now, back to the F-35's problems here a bit. What about the vertical takeoff? Is that working well? At least that technology has been mastered for decades by others, if not, you know, the Americans.
Right, so that making sure that that works is still an ongoing concern, and yeah.
So in other words, they don't necessarily have that solved,
right?
Even that decades-old technology there. Is there any part of the F-35 that they are sure were? I was going to say the cockpit, but no, I remember the time the pilot got locked in the cockpit, and it took a few hours to get him out of there with crowbars. So
I thought that was with the F-22.
Oh, that could have been the 22, maybe. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, well, I defer to you on that. Is it so the cockpit works then? The hinge on the latch on the thing has not been a problem so far on the F-35?
Yeah, as far as we know, that's not a problem, but we do know that the nut plates that are used on the outside of the F-35 continue to be something that they undercount how often they're having to replace those.
Yeah. And now, I'm sorry, because I just kind of made a wild assertion about the stealthiness, but is that your understanding, too, that these things aren't really stealthy if you just point an old-fashioned long-wave radar at them?
That is my understanding as well. And with the wing drop concerns that we were talking about before and putting those external spoilers on, that's going to be something else that compromises the signature of the plane.
Right. Which is also why I can barely hold any bombs, because for the supposed stealthiness that it doesn't have in the first place. Anyway, great work, Mandy. Thank you so much for your time on the show.
Thank you so much.
All right, y'all, that's Mandy Smithberger. She's at pogo.org. The article is the study, not ready for prime time. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, XKeyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betrayed their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the Off Now project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The next of these great workshops is Saturday, April 11th in Las Vegas. It's just $15. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions.